Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello, dear listener, and welcome to Ready to Pop, the ultimate pregnancy podcast with me, Caroline Foran. So this is the second episode in my 8-part series, and I'm thrilled to have the support of luxury organic Irish beauty and lifestyle brand Voya for this particular episode. I've always adored the brand, but I've been using and loving their product range from mothers-to-be, particularly their Mama Oil, which is a stretch mark minimizing body oil as my belly grows bigger every week. I think from the moment you find out you're pregnant, it's just so important to start prioritizing your own self-care and really look after yourself. Voya's product range ensures this never ever feels like a chore, but rather the ultimate luxury experience of indulgence at home, and I can't recommend them enough, and you absolutely deserve it. And don't even get me started on their candles. Be sure to follow me on Instagram as well, at Caroline Foran, as along with this episode, I will be giving one lucky listener a gorgeous Voya hamper to enjoy. So at this stage in the hypothetical pregnancy journey that we're on in Ready to Pop, we are going to assume that you've had a positive pregnancy test. Massive congratulations. I'm over the moon to be joined by the very lovely Dr. Sarah Murphy. She's a doctor of obstetrics and gynecology to get a bird's eye view of your pregnancy as a whole, as well as honing in on helping you cope, particularly with that first trimester, which can be quite tough and a little bit isolating. I wish I had this episode myself back when I got those two positive lines on the stick, so I really hope you find it helpful and do enjoy. Dr. Sarah Murphy, thank you so, so much for being my guest on Ready to Pop. And for this episode, we're going to assume now that the listener has had a positive pregnancy test, and we're looking at pregnancy at a glance, as well as coping with the first trimester in particular. But before we get into the chat, and there's an awful lot to chat about, can I ask you just to start by telling me a little bit about your background and your expertise?
Yeah, of course. So I'm so glad to be on the podcast. So I am a doctor working in Ireland in the National Maternity Hospital at the moment. And I'm doing subspecialty training in obstetrics and gynecology. So this is kind of my area. And I'm just about to finish my master's in obstetrics and gynae and then have a diploma in women's health. So this is really what I'm interested in. This is what I love.
Wow. Okay. So you're right there in the thick of it. And this is all, I mean, you're all day, every day, you're consuming this information. So all my questions for you should come easy.
Hopefully.
So pregnancy is one of, if not probably the biggest physical change a woman can go through in her lifetime. I know it has been for me. And when you're just finding out that you're pregnant, you know, obviously if it's what you wanted and you're happy about it, it can be very exciting, but it can also be super overwhelming to process, you know, everything that's going to happen, the physical change, the lifestyle change, and what the next 9 months will bring. So with this episode, I really wanted to give people a bit of a bird's eye view of the typical pregnancy journey. If it's okay with you, we'll start at the very beginning, and I'm going to ask you, so when you find out that you're pregnant, you're actually already considered 4 weeks pregnant typically, is that right?
Yeah, exactly. So what we do, you're working off the assumption that your period was 4 weeks ago, and that's kind of what we assume. Now, I suppose the caveat with that is if you've really irregular periods, it can be a bit difficult. And if, we'll say, for example, it was an unplanned pregnancy and someone was on the oral contraceptive pill and hasn't had a period, that makes it a little bit difficult too. So we try to get an idea of what you might be from working out when the last period was and go off that. And then when you get your 12-week scan, the dates might be changed a little bit. But yeah, that's the basic idea of what you work off of.
Okay. And pregnancy tests at home these days are like really high quality. I know when I went to my GP, as I thought, I just, you know, should book in as soon as I found out. And I thought she was going to do like another test to confirm, but she said, to be honest, the tests at home now are just as good. So do you need to confirm your test or have it confirmed by a doctor?
You don't. So like just what your GP said, the tests now that you can get in shops and do at home are really, really accurate. But I suppose it's still a great idea to go to your GP because what they're going to do is refer you into the maternity hospital of your choice. And they're also going to be providing you care during your pregnancy. So it's no harm to link in with them anyway, but it's not necessary, if that makes sense.
Okay. And is that something, I mean, if you're going to start thinking about what hospital you want to go to, that's something you want to decide in the first few weeks or at least get some advice on. So going to your GP, when as soon after you find out would be wise, would you say?
Absolutely. So you're going to come to the hospital routinely for the first time around 12 weeks. So
okay.
That, and I suppose that isn't that long, because you might only find out you're pregnant at 6, 7, 8 weeks. So a great idea then to pop into your GP. They can have a chat with you. Sometimes it's just logistically what hospital is closest to you. But you can, there's loads of online forums, and some of your friends might have been pregnant. So you can have a discussion with them and see where you'd like best to go with your pregnancy.
Is it more common to find out that you're pregnant as soon as you've missed a period?
And again, yes and no. So I suppose okay. Definitely, if you're trying for a pregnancy, then you're definitely waiting for that missed period and doing a pregnancy test immediately. If you're not necessarily trying, you mightn't realise you've missed a period. But also, if your periods are irregular, and some women have periods every 6 weeks, so you know they might be past that 6 week mark before they even realise a period has been missed. So not always.
Okay, and from the minute you find out you're pregnant, you're going to start thinking, okay, there's a lot of changes I'm going to need to make. First of all, I'm not going to have that espresso martini. But is there anything immediate that you think people should be mindful of if they've just found out? So like things like medications that maybe wouldn't be suitable, or anything to be mindful of?
So kind of the medications you'd be really concerned with. And I'm talking about things like blood thinners and epilepsy. Those people who are on those are usually linked with a doctor who would probably have given them advice with regards to pregnancy. So women who have diabetes, epilepsy, a history of blood clots, they're usually advised to change their medications before they even think of getting pregnant. So there's a lot of work behind the scenes there before you even get pregnant.
Okay.
For women who are generally healthy and well, there isn't a lot you have to do. So obviously we advise not to drink during pregnancy and not to smoke. And I suppose sometimes those, especially with smoking, that's easier said than done. But if you can try and eliminate those from your lifestyle, then that's brilliant. Or if you can get advice on how to eliminate them, that's brilliant. In terms of medications, if you're not on any, that's brilliant. And then you can have a quick look. So things like paracetamol are fine. You know, if you're on vitamins, that's also fine. But if there's anything you're on and you're not sure about, you can just ask. Other than that, it's just kind of listening to your body. So, you know, I would say you don't have to make any major changes with your diet.
There's
certain things we say to avoid. So there are things like soft cheese or sushi. It's kind of things that aren't fully cooked, or that there's an increased risk of having bacteria in it, because we do know that pregnant women can get a lot sicker.
Okay. On the tablet side of things, I remember learning pretty quickly that I think I had like a bit of a blocked nose, and I wanted what's that tablet that you take to like a Sudafed, and then it was like, oh, actually that's not suitable during pregnancy. Or I was taking L-lysine because I was getting cold sores, and then it was like, oh, I don't know if that's suitable. So is it like, it should say it on the if it's a supplement or something, it should say on the bottle, right?
Exactly. The only caveat I would have with that is, I suppose in pregnancy, we're very, very cautious. And there are sometimes that certain medications say, check with your doctor first. And that doesn't necessarily mean that they're not safe. It's just, it's more the company, I suppose, covering themselves.
Yeah.
If there's anything you're not sure about, I would ask your midwife or doctor in the hospital, or ask your GP. Because sometimes, I suppose, the backup packets can nearly have too many warnings, if that makes sense. And I think sometimes your doctor is the best person to advise you.
Okay, perfect. This probably seems like a very obvious question, but it was confusing to me in that pregnancy lasts typically 40 weeks, right? And you're considered full term at 37, so you could go at 37 weeks. And you're also kind of pregnant for what I've realized is like 10 months. So what's going on there?
So I suppose what we do, just to get a nice little ballpark, is we give you your due date, and your due date is given to you when you are 40 weeks pregnant. But we can't expect everybody to do the exact same thing. So a full-term pregnancy is anything from 37 to 42 weeks. And any woman who delivers within that time frame, we'd consider normal or full-term. So for some women, that might only mean that you're pregnant for kind of 8 and a bit months. And for some women, that brings you up to almost 10 months. But it's all within the spectrum of normal.
Okay. And in this day and age, would you ever be let go past 42 weeks? Probably not.
Yes and no, I suppose. Ultimately, as a woman, it is your choice what you do with your body and your pregnancy.
Okay.
So we would advise women to, if they have not gone into labour by 42 weeks, to elect for an induction of labour. And that's where we give you some medications to try and bring on the labour. And the reason for that is, I suppose, the placenta, the thing that's the afterbirth, the thing that's connected to you and the baby, we think that that kind of has a shelf life. And after 42 weeks, there's some evidence that it doesn't work as well. Okay. And we do see that the risk of stillbirths, unfortunately, can go up after 42 weeks. Now, there are some women who do not want to be induced. And ultimately, that is their decision. We cannot force an induction on anyone. So we'll recommend and strongly recommend an induction at 42 weeks. But ultimately, it's a woman's decision what she does.
Okay. I know myself anyway, I think if I was at 42 weeks, I'd be like, get out. I want to feel like myself again. Okay. And then this again will seem like a really obvious question to you, but the trimesters, I was thinking of three groups of 12 weeks, but that wouldn't be enough for a full pregnancy. So just to clarify, the first trimester is weeks 1 to 12.
Yep.
And the second one is longer, 12 to 28.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the last one is 28 to whenever you go.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. So that's kind of the way we'll discuss pregnancies. You'll hear us say, you might hear sometimes T1, T2, T3, or you'll say, oh, you're in the second trimester. And that's the way we'll kind of talk about pregnancies.
Okay. And as well, in terms of, like, people like to say how many months pregnant they are. I was unsure at when I was going into 31 weeks, and I was Googling it, and it was like, oh, you could be 7 or 8 months pregnant. And then I'm like, but I've got like 2 months or more to go. So you're better off going by weeks than months.
Yeah, absolutely. Because even I don't really register months. So when I hear a woman tell me how many months she has, I nearly have to go and divide it by four, because everything we do is via weeks. So okay. I think weeks is kind of the better terminology that we go off of.
Okay, so the key pregnancy milestones, if people are thinking, okay, what have I got in store for me? Let's assume that someone is going through the public health system here. Every woman will typically get a scan at 12 weeks. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. And this, I suppose, again, is everything going well and everything's going routinely. So you will have seen your GP and they'll have referred you into your hospital of choice, and then you'll come and see us around 12 weeks. And I mean, that might be 11 and it might be 13, but in and around that.
And why 12 weeks? Yeah.
So this is where we date your pregnancy. And I suppose as well, unfortunately, in the first trimester, so from 0 to 12 weeks, there is it's the highest risk of miscarriage. So anything from 1 to 4 or 1 in 5 women will miscarry. And I suppose once you get to that 12 weeks, it's almost a safer period. Mm-hmm. And it's the time, I suppose, that we're happier that the pregnancy is going to continue. And that's when we see you and confirm the pregnancy and confirm your date. So that's kind of the reason for that time period.
And obviously, I mean, miscarriage is something nobody wants to think about. But as you said, it's very real and it's very common. What is the rates of, does it drop off after 12 weeks? It's still possible, but it's less likely.
Mm-hmm. It's very less likely. So I suppose a miscarriage that happens in the first trimester is a horrible, but it's a sort of a, we'd say it's a sporadic event. So it's something that just happens. Mm-hmm. And there's usually no real cause for it. A miscarriage that unfortunately happens in the second trimester, there's more likely a reason that something wasn't right. So whether that be that unfortunately the poor baby had a genetic or congenital problem, or mum might have an underlying condition. And that's not to say it's mum's fault. It's just she might have a clotting disorder that she doesn't know about. So when miscarriages happen in the second trimester, we do a lot of investigations to try and find out why this happened. Whereas when they happen in the first, it is just something that happens. And it doesn't mean that it'll happen again. And it doesn't mean that a full-term pregnancy isn't a possibility. So we don't investigate it.
And then, so assuming again that you're in the public system, you do your 12 weeks, you get to see the scan, you get to see pictures, whatever, and then you probably don't come back then till week 20.
Yeah, exactly. So and again, this is someone who's really well and has no medical problems. So you'll come on 12 weeks and we'll ask you every question under the sun to get to know about you. And you'll have your lovely 12-week scan and get to see your baby. Then you come back to us for 20 weeks. And Caroline, this is actually something I didn't realise. There's some counties in Ireland where that 20-week scan doesn't happen in the public system.
Okay.
So it happens in the Dublin hospitals. And it's definitely a point of controversy in the health system. But in Dublin, in the Dublin hospitals, you come at 20 weeks and you get a big scan. So this kind of takes 30, 40 minutes or so. And this is where the sonographer looks at the baby in details. They look at their brain, they look at their heart, they look at their kidneys, and they just make sure that everything is okay with the baby.
Just, I suppose, to give it a bit of insight into the difference between public and private, and then there's semi-private as well, it can be a little bit confusing. Would you typically, if you're going public, you'd have those two big milestone scans and appointments, but you'll still be going into the hospital in and around that. It's just that you won't be having a scan if you're public, right?
Yeah, exactly. So you'll come into the public hospital, and it varies depending on how far along you are. So you might be seen kind of every 8 weeks at the start, and then as you get closer to your due date, you might be seen every 4 weeks, down to every two, down to every 1 week. And these are just to check up on you more than anything. So you'll get your blood pressure checked, your urine checked. We'll make sure that you're happy with your baby's movements and that you haven't had any bleeding and things like that. And we'll put the scanner on more to check the volume of fluid around the baby to make sure the baby's moving, but it isn't a big detail scan where we weigh, you know, we guess yeah. the baby's weight and like that.
Okay, and that, so if you're going public, when you do find out you're pregnant and you go to your GP, they will look after getting you put into the system and getting you set up that way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, and then if you go private, which I decided to go private myself for my first pregnancy, obviously people know me from my anxiety books, my anxiety podcast, and I just wanted to limit the chance of any kind of uncertainty and anxiety, and I just decided we decided to save up and go the private route. So for that, for people, so that they're aware, I had to do my own kind of research into different consultants and ring around, and they all have their own prices, and then you just sort of go with it. Obviously it's great to get recommendations from friends and stuff, but your GP wouldn't do that for you. You would just call the secretary yourself of a consultant that you think sounds like the right fit for you, right?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And I know there are some forums, like I can't think of any names at the moment, but I've seen them before, like kind of pregnancy and motherhood forums, and they also kind of discuss their experiences with consultants. But I think friends, especially if you've had friends who've had babies and who have gone private, your friends are who you trust maybe the most. So that's a great way to figure out who you think might be a good fit for you.
Absolutely. And then for what I have found really reassuring about the private route is that every single time I go in, I get a scan. So my consultant said, you know, we don't want to, well, he's more comfortable saying we don't want to just guess or assume what baby is doing or how they're getting on, but we like to see it. So for anyone who's particularly anxious about the development or how it's going, like for me, that's been a real comfort in that every time I've gone in, and I haven't been going in any more than you probably go in a public scenario. I've been going in once every 4 to 5 weeks, especially during COVID. It's been even longer. And it's great to be able to see what's happening there as well. Can I ask you, semi-private, what does that mean?
So semi-private, and I think this is something that's actually offered in the Dublin hospitals again. This is where your antenatal visits, so when you come in to see somebody during the pregnancy, that's all with a consultant. So you'll come in kind of the same kind of time frame, you'll be seen by the consultant. But when you come in to deliver the baby, you would be seen by hospital doctors who aren't consultants, and of course the midwives. So your kind of your antenatal care is provided by a single consultant, but your care during delivery and afterwards isn't specifically provided by that consultant.
Okay, and even for me going private, I'm not guaranteed that my consultant will be there because he could be away. Well, obviously at the moment he's not probably going anywhere with the pandemic, but it's really the midwives who are, you know, in charge on the day of delivery, right?
Absolutely. And I suppose as well, labour can take a while. So labour can take, you know, hours, and we could be talking anything up to 10, 12 hours sometimes. And it's the midwife who's there with you. And they're providing you all of your care during that. It's usually the consultant will come in for the specific delivery of the baby, but it's the midwife who's been minding you for the time period before that.
And just while I think of it, if someone wants to find out the gender, how soon can they find that out?
I suppose in theory you can kind of see from about 16 weeks on, but it is difficult. So the best time I think to ask is at your 20-week scan, because they're scanning for quite a while and it's nice and detailed, and also baby's genitalia is a little bit more developed, so it is easier to see. So 20 weeks is probably a good time to ask.
Okay, and then I made the decision to do some prenatal screening tests, so that I did that at about week 8 or 9, and that was something that is available to everyone if they want to do, and that's for looking at things like the likelihood of certain I guess, genetic conditions. Is that right? Like a Down syndrome?
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. So this is a blood test that you can get. So it's completely non-invasive. All they do is take your blood. Mm-hmm. It's, you probably know better. It's about, I think, €450.
Yeah, it's about that. I think I paid €250 because I was paying for private, so they give you a discount. But yeah, it is. There's a set price.
So kind of that-ish price, you get a blood test, and what it does is it tells you the gender, if you'd like to know.
Yeah, that's when I found out.
And the other is it tests for three genetic conditions. So one of those is Down syndrome. And unfortunately, the other two conditions it tests for, we call them, you might have heard of this, you know, fatal abnormalities, or mm-hmm. these are conditions that the baby is most likely going to die at birth or soon afterwards. So, and what this test does is it tells you the likelihood of these things. So it doesn't tell you that the baby certainly has them. It tells you that the baby either, you know, your chance of these things is very, very low, which is wonderful, or it tells you that there's a high chance that the baby has one of these conditions. And I think before you get this test, what you have to consider is what you're going to do with these results. So
yeah,
if you're told a baby has a high chance of these, sometimes what we talk about is invasive testing. And this is where we take a sample of blood from baby's cord while it's inside you, or from the baby's fluid. And those tests have a little bit of a risk associated with them. So you have to consider, if the test comes back high probability, are you going to undertake those risks? And then what you have to think about is, if the baby comes back with one of those genetic conditions, what would you do with that information? Mm-hmm. And I think there are things that you should consider first before you undertake those tests. But then if you and your partner are happy with what you would like to do with the results, and it's something you'd like to know, then work away with them.
Absolutely. So just to clarify there, so the blood test you do is just going to highlight a likelihood. And then if you then do the more invasive one, that's a confirmation test.
Absolutely. That's exactly it.
Okay. So let's talk about the first trimester now, because I think for this episode, a lot of people listening are going to have maybe just found out they're pregnant. A lot of women don't want to share the news until they feel a little bit more confident that they're over that threshold of the likelihood of miscarriage. But it's really isolating, because it's all new to you. You know, you're probably feeling exhausted. If you're like me and a lot of women, you can be incredibly sick, and it can be overwhelming how much information is out there. So I suppose the first thing that I would have desperately wanted to address was coping with morning sickness. And it hit me at about, I think, 5.5, 6 weeks. And I've always had like a fear of being actually like vomiting. So I was like so upset. I was like, oh Jesus, I won't be able to cope with this. But it's something that so many women unfortunately have to endure. But why do we get morning sickness, and why do some women get it and some don't? Do we know anything? Do we know why?
We know a bit. So we think it's a response to the pregnancy hormone. So I suppose when you're in your first trimester, that's the time period where that pregnancy hormone goes right up. But we don't know for certain, because we don't know why, we'll say, you felt really sick and another woman doesn't. And we also do know that morning sickness for some women, and the person I always think of actually is Kate Middleton, hers continued the whole way through the pregnancy, at which stage that pregnancy hormone is a lot lower. So that's our theory, but it doesn't explain everything. So the honest answer is we don't know for absolute certain.
But in the first trimester, that hormone is doubling every day. Is that right?
We say doubling every 48 hours, but yeah, it's increasing every day.
Okay. And it's from what I was reading, week like 9 or 7 to maybe 10 can be where it peaks. And then for a lot of women, it will start to taper off then.
Yeah, you're spot on. Kind of 8 to 10 weeks is when it peaks and then starts to drop. And it's just that another hormone in the pregnancy takes over.
And what is that hormone?
Progesterone.
Okay, so progesterone is our friend.
Progesterone is certainly our friend, yeah.
For me, I thought I was waiting for week 12, like I was going to be a new woman, and it has continued, but it went from being like extreme nausea, like all day long, where I literally, and luckily I work for myself, so I was able to be at home with a laptop, you know, I didn't have to kind of put on a face or anything, but you know, it can be so debilitating, and I was getting sick, but actually not that often, but for me, the nausea was worse than the vomiting, because at least with the vomiting, you get a little bit of relief for a while after. And then after the 12 weeks, the nausea eventually kind of became a lot easier to handle and less frequent. But I still get caught out, even just last weekend, and I'm you know, well into my third trimester now, if I go too long without food and then I put something, like something kind of substantial in my stomach, it's going to come back up. And if you had told me at the beginning of the pregnancy that this was going to be the case, I would have ran a million miles. I would have probably been put off doing it in the first place. But I want to reassure women that the sickness, it's not like having a bug. Unless you have hyperemesis, it's not, you know, it's actually more of just a purge.
Yeah, exactly. And I think sometimes you hear, you know, when you talk about nausea and vomiting, I always think, people think, oh, it's just nausea, that's fine.
No.
Nausea is debilitating. It's a horrible sensation, and it can affect everything. Like, it's really hard to engage when you feel nauseous, and then it can have effects on your mood as well. And I think women should be really kind to themselves, and we sometimes get women who come into the emergency department and they're apologizing for coming in with just nausea, and they're almost like, oh, I'm so sorry for wasting your time. And women need to be really reassured that, one, it is normal, but two, it is horrible. And you can definitely ask for support if you need it.
Like, at this stage now, looking back, I would rather, and people say, oh yeah, like you say, it's just a bit of nausea, but I would rather get sick once a week than have nausea and never get sick, because it is so much more debilitating. And so in terms of like how to manage that, actually, before I get on to that, assuming kind of managing relatively normal morning sickness, how can a woman know that she's got more of like the Kate Middleton hyperemesis?
HEG is the kind of shorter way for
okay.
it. So morning sickness, I suppose, is, and it can be in itself as a spectrum, but you're nauseous and you're getting sick, and it, unfortunately, unlike the name suggests, it isn't just in the morning. And you will be able to eat somewhat, and you will not lose weight, or you shouldn't lose weight. When somebody has what Kate Middleton had, HEG, you are getting sick so often that you actually start to lose weight, and women can lose kind of plus 5% of their body weight. Because they're bringing up so much fluid, they also, the salts in their blood can start to change. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of things that we can only replace through drip. So when someone has HEG, they almost know about it. They're very, very sick. And often they need to be admitted into hospital with it.
Then is there, in terms of like, is if you have HEG, are you going to have it for the whole thing?
I suppose some women might, and some women might not. And it's only by getting through it that you find out. So poor Kate, okay. I think, for almost the whole pregnancy. Some women might have it till kind of into the teens and then it'll resolve, but it's hard to say.
Yeah. And as horrible as it is to be sick in your pregnancy, because it does take from the excitement. You don't look pregnant at that point. You just feel awful. And I felt this kind of guilt of like, oh, am I not grateful? And I was, but honestly, I felt miserable. I felt awful every single day. And you know, it's okay to complain about that and to say that that's really tough, because you know, if we had an injured leg or something, we would talk about it. So I think it's really important that women feel that they don't have to be a martyr about it, and just because of the beautiful miracle of being pregnant and childbirth, it's still really hard.
Absolutely, it's really hard. Like, women can't work, they can't exercise, they can't go out with their friends sometimes. It's horrible. It is really, really tough. And I think it deserves a lot of attention and a lot of support.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I was first went to my consultant for my first appointment, and that was because I was private, that was at about week 8. And I just said to him, I really am really struggling. And I didn't know if there's anything he could do. But he prescribed me a medicine called Caraban. And I wanted to leap over and give him a kiss on the cheek there and then, because I just, the thought that something would help, or the thought that I didn't have to endure this, was just like music to my ears. And actually, what was interesting was that before I kind of had talked to my GP or my pharmacist when I just found out I was pregnant, and they were like, oh no, like you would never get that unless you were so severely ill. And my consultant then said, no, look, we don't want you to end up in hospital. We want to try and mitigate it as much as we can. So if people are really, really feeling bad, is that a safe option that they can consult with their doctor?
Absolutely. And I kind of resent is a very strong word, but I almost resent saying just leave, leave the tablets unless you're feeling awful. If a woman is having a tough time and we have these safe tablets that people can take, then I think they should absolutely take them. So Caravan is a great one. We know it's safe in pregnancy. For some women, it is a miracle worker. And it's Caravan is a combination of two tablets. So one is a tablet that stops you feeling sick, and the other is a B vitamin, which is thought to help, but also it kind of replaces that B vitamin if you're not getting a lot of food in. So Caravan is brilliant. And there's also about three or four others, which is really reassuring for women, because for some women, Caravan doesn't work, unfortunately. And then there's backups that we can try, and they're safe as well. So I think it's because sometimes the GPs can be a little bit reluctant, depending. Mm-hmm. A woman is feeling crap and has not yet had her appointment in the hospital. She should come into the hospital by the emergency department, and she can be assessed there, and we can prescribe her tablets. I think there's no reason in suffering when we have these safe tablets available.
Absolutely. And you know what? Had I known that, I don't think I would have had half the anxiety and the upsetness at that first week of feeling bad, because I just thought, well, this is just a sentencing. I have to just deal with it. Even if I'm getting sick several times a day, I have to just be told, well, that's just it. You're pregnant. Go and deal with it. And that can actually really affect your mental health as well. So I really want women to know that if they're, you know, feeling really bad, there is options out there. And I remember being just so frustrated when people say, oh, just eat ginger nut biscuits, and they just did nothing for me. So like, if people are not so bad that they need medication, but they still want to manage, you know, the nausea, what would you recommend as a professional for helping keep it at bay, or like limiting it a little bit?
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So I've learned a lot from the dietitians in Hollis Street. Hollis Street has a really, and I think other hospitals do as well, but that's just my experience, have a great dietetics department, and they work really closely with women who are suffering from this. So the kind of tips that they would give is, you know, the really basic things. So eat little and often. So, mm-hmm. you know, don't sit down and have a big curry, unless you want it, of course. So little and often. And then the things that kind of are Irish mammies always tell you, like dry food, so dry toast, dry crackers and things like that. And then I think the next thing is, I know from talking to some women, they're so conscious about kind of eating healthily, and they're like, I'm trying really hard to eat healthily, but it's just not sitting. When you have hyperemesis, what you just need to do is eat. So it doesn't matter that you're not getting your five a day for this little period of time. It doesn't matter if, you know, you're not eating foods that are, we generically call healthy, you just need to eat. Okay. And if that means that you want to eat a packet of crisps, eat the packet of crisps. Your body just needs calories. So what we would usually advise is just eat, and eat whatever it is that you think is going to sit and that you have an appetite for. And that's the most important thing. You can worry about having a healthy diet later, yeah. But right now you need to eat. So eat whatever you think is going to sit in your stomach.
And that's so reassuring, because I had the palate of like a 5-year-old child, and I still, to be honest, I still do. You go into it with the best of intentions, thinking, you know, I'm going to have all these, the rainbow of foods, and really it just, nature takes over and you just have to do whatever you have to do to get through it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's important as well, because this is the start of where you are starting to care for someone else, but you need to care for yourself too. And that needs to continue the whole way through the pregnancy. You need to look after your pregnancy, but you need to mind yourself.
Absolutely. Another thing that I think is worth highlighting in the first trimester, and people might not realize it, is how unbelievably tired you can feel. I was lucky in that I'm a very tired person anyway, so I didn't notice them. And I think, to be honest, I was so sick that I wasn't even aware if I was tired, because I was on high alert for feeling nauseous all the time. I was just wired. But there's an awful lot of change happening in those first 12 weeks. And even though you're not carrying around a massive bump, it's very normal to be exhausted.
Exhausted. So this, if you're a first time, this is the first time it's ever happened to your body. Like, your hormone profile has changed. The blood flow within your body is starting to change. You're growing a human inside, you know, your womb, which is stretching for the very first time. And you've also made a placenta. You know, your body has gone through so much. And I think it's very normal that you should feel tired. And that's another thing that I think women shouldn't beat themselves up if they need to take some time off work, or the only thing they're doing in the evenings is lying down. You're doing something amazing, and it's the first time you're doing it. So, you know, a lot of credit needs to be due there. And I just think women should be kind to themselves and expect that they could be tired, but don't beat themselves up if they are tired.
Absolutely. And even for women who are maybe on their second or third baby, they are doing that while having a little toddler probably to look after as well.
Absolutely. And then, and some women are working as well. Like, that's a lot.
Yeah.
I don't have kids actually. But like, I come home from work and I'm wrecked. And then I can't imagine what it would be like to have kids and to be pregnant. So absolutely. I can't imagine how tired some women must feel. And I think that should be kind of, they should be just really, we should think very kindly of them.
Okay. So then second trimester, I was told I would have this burst of energy and I'd feel like $1 million and you'd have the glow and you'd be blooming. Is it typical that you'll feel better in your second trimester?
Usually. And again, not for everyone, but usually you'll kind of, when you get into those higher teen weeks, you do typically feel like you have a lot more energy. For a lot of women, the sickness resolves or it certainly improves. And I think it's nice as well because you start to have a bump and you might start to feel baby move, and that's really lovely as well. So second trimester can be a nice time.
And is that because progesterone has taken over the driving seat?
Yeah, usually. Yeah.
Okay. I obviously want to highlight that there is still, I mean, you think that when you get past the first trimester, you're home and dry, but there is some symptoms that can arrive. I kind of feel like you get past one thing and another thing might come along. Or also, let's say that you might be someone who just sails through pregnancy and doesn't have a bother. And I'm really jealous of those people. But something that came along for me in the second trimester was a bit around ligament pain and actually quite severe pelvic girdle pain. So while I was feeling better, obviously the caravan had helped, my nausea was pretty much gone. Then I had these other things to contend with. And, you know, you think, oh, am I complaining again? But really, every stage brings a new physical change.
Exactly. So you kind of referenced two of the biggest things that we see. So round ligament pain. So the round ligament is this ligament that joins your womb sort of to your pelvis. And when you're not pregnant, it's not being stretched at all. And then when you get into the second trimester, your womb really starts to grow and it comes up out of the pelvis. So these round ligaments are being stretched for the very first time and they're supporting a heavier womb that has a baby and fluid. And the way sometimes I think women are really surprised at how sore it is, and the way I try to tell them, do you know, if you'd never ever done exercise in your life and then you did, you know, you ran 10 kilometers and did, you know, 100 burpees, your leg muscles would be in bits. And it's really similar to that. These muscles are working for the very first time and they're working really hard, so it is really sore. And then pelvic girdle pain, I suppose, is, so the thought process is that, you know, your pelvis, it's joined together at the front by a little bit of cartilage. And when you get pregnant, that pelvis stretches and it really pulls on all the cartilage and ligaments. And I suppose that's allowing your pregnancy to grow. And it's also going to be allowing your pregnancy to come out the vaginal route. But that's really sore too. And again, it's the first time that this is ever happening to your body. So it is really sore.
It has felt, I've described it like either being kicked in the vagina or as if the baby's foot is stuck down there. And yeah, it's been really tough. But then again, you know, when, if you're, you have to have the confidence and the self-compassion to say, do you know what, this is really troubling me, and go and seek help. So I went in to my consultant. I said, look, I don't want to have to put up with this. And he put me on to the physio department in the hospital. Mine was so bad and still is, that I had to get crutches. And I don't want to scare people, but just for when it really flares up, I just need the crutches just to take the pressure off my pelvis. I haven't actually really used them that much, but I also got a great band that I wrap around if I'm going to go for a walk or something. So there is, and then there's exercises, and there is things you can do. And like, because I have been sharing everything on my social media the whole way through, and the amount of people who say, oh my god, me too, I'm right there with you. Because for so long, all we saw of pregnancy was just a positive confirmation test. We're so happy, this is amazing, and then here's the baby, aren't we so lucky and so grateful. And as much as I don't want to scare people, I want women to feel that, and their partners, you know, whether they're male, female, or whether they're doing it solo, to feel that it's okay to kind of struggle through it and to vocalize that.
Absolutely. And I think you said it earlier in the podcast, you know, you're supposed to feel grateful, and of course you're grateful, but you can also feel like crap. And I think a lot of it stems, I suspect a lot of our grandmothers probably suffered a lot in pregnancy and just got on with it. And I think it's sort of an Irish thing as well, where you just get on with it, and it's because it's this natural, lovely thing, which it is, but it's hard. And if there are solutions to these things, then we should take advantage of those. And you correctly kind of identified all the things we do for pelvic girdle pain. So physios are absolutely brilliant, and they can give you loads of exercises, and they can also give you bands or belts. And what they sort of do is support your bump and support your pelvis, and they can, that alone can offer women a lot of relief. And then in some bad cases, crutches give you that kind of support that you need. And obviously that can be scary, but if that can help you, then that's brilliant.
Yes. Okay. And then in terms of feeling the baby move, it was about week 22, I think, for me. And I remember Googling, which is obviously the worst thing you can do, like, when should I start to feel that? And I was like, oh, is it a little bit late for me? But then I realized when I went into the hospital, my placenta was sitting to the front. And so there was like a bit of a buffer there. And now when I did start to feel it, it came on, and you know, there's been lots of activity ever since. But roughly, when is it normal to start feeling the baby move? And is there a time when you should be concerned?
Yeah, so we kind of say anything from 16 to 24 weeks.
It's 60 weeks.
And typically what you'll find is women who've had a baby before will feel the movements maybe a little bit earlier. Okay. So 22 was, you know, completely within the normal limits. What we would like is for you to feel movements by 24. And if you don't, I would kind of recommend linking in with your doctor. And sometimes it's what you've described there. It's that you have your placenta on the front wall. And the placenta is quite thick. Sometimes I'll show it to women when I'm scanning them, and I'll say, look, this is how thick your abdominal wall is with your skin, fat, and muscle. And this is the size of the placenta. And sometimes it's bigger than that. So when baby's kicking it, it's almost cushioned. And then other things, I suppose, baby's back might be to your front, which means that the kicks are going backwards and you're not feeling it and things like that. So there can be a few reasons why it can be normal, but we just like to have a little look kind of coming up 24-ish weeks, just to make sure everything is normal.
Okay. And then as your pregnancy progresses, you're advised to just keep an eye on that the movement is regular. But I think a lot of people panic about that. And I mean, there's always going to be, well, assuming all is well, there's movement, but they also sleep in your belly too. So it's not like, if they're not having a party the whole time, it's not necessarily. But an awful lot of women messaged me to say that they felt really stupid about it, but they came into the emergency room being worried about not feeling movement. But my consultant said to me, if you don't feel movement and you're worried, just come in. No one's going to judge you. No one's going to think that you're being silly. So you know, do take action if you're concerned.
Mm-hmm. And I think in the last years there's been a really big movement to encourage this, and it's called kicks count and kicks two count. So kind of after 28 weeks, your baby's nerves and brain are really starting to develop, and what they will start to do is develop a pattern. And I have women who come in and they tell me they're looking up what's normal on the internet, and I don't love that. What's normal is for what's normal for you and your baby. And that's different for every woman. So some women might feel no movements during the day, and then baby has a party at nighttime. And that's what's always happened. So for that woman, that's normal. So from 28 weeks, I would always tell women to start listening into your body and seeing what's normal for your baby. And then any variation from that, or any time you say to yourself, I'm not sure, I'd recommend you try one thing first. So what we would say is to have a cold or sugary drink, or, you know, like an ice cream, lie down on your left side with no phone, no company, close your eyes, your hands in your tummy, and give it plus 30 minutes. Because as you said, babies have sleeps. Usually the sleeps last 30 to 40 minutes and not longer. So if you come up to the hour and you're still not happy with that baby's movements and you're still worried, I would go into the emergency department, and you must never feel silly. When baby's inside you and you're at home, the only way we have to check how baby is the movements. So if you're not were happy about those movements, I would get it checked. And you might be told, actually what happens sometimes, and it's great, is women will say, oh my God, while I'm sitting here, baby's having a party again, yeah. I'm so sorry. And I'm like, no, this is the best outcome. I'm so happy. That's brilliant. We're delighted when baby kind of makes a liar out of you almost. But come in, we can do a trace of baby's heart and scan baby, and either, you know, we'll say, look, come in and stay with us so we can make sure everything's fine, or we'll say, no, that is a really happy baby. And you get that reassurance. There's no point in being at home and being worried.
Yeah. I think because, you know, these shows like One Born Every Minute, or we think that, okay, the medical professions are just so like desensitized to the fact that every woman, or like it's so common, but for you, if it's your first time, everything is new to you and you don't know what's normal and what's not, and it can be really unnerving. And I think we need to move away from this feeling of apologizing or feeling guilty for, you know, and the thing is, well, I haven't actually obviously given birth yet, but what everyone tells me is, you know, the midwives and everything, they're just, because they're doing it all day every day doesn't mean they're not really compassionate with you, and they're not really sympathetic with what you're going through, because it is your first time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I remember I said it actually to someone yesterday. It was when I was in college, and it wasn't related to pregnancy, it was just from a different lecturer, and they said to never forget that even though all of these things are my everyday as a doctor, for the patient it is not their everyday. Yeah. This is new and scary, and it's actually something that's really stuck with me, and it's really important to remember.
Okay, and then the third trimester, I'm going to have an episode that will focus on preparing people for labour and all the things that can happen there, but just as a general overview, for me, I started to feel tired again, and you know, your bump is getting bigger, and physical discomfort and stuff. So what can we expect in general from the third trimester?
Yeah, so it's things get more difficult. So I suppose sleeping is difficult. A lot of women will say, you know, I have three or four pillows around me to try and get into a comfortable position. Getting up and moving around is difficult. You feel big, you feel heavy. You can feel quite tired. It can be difficult to continue with, you know, working. If you were exercising, it can be difficult to continue with that. So it's kind of a real physical discomfort, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And then for me, the heartburn got just, I thought I was getting away with murder. And then on week 30, it kicked in and it was so bad. And do you know what? I'm so glad, because I've been sharing it on social media. So many women have been like, try this, or, you know, this really worked for me. And I didn't even think there was apart from like, you know, Gaviscon or something, which wasn't really doing much for me. I was conditioned to be like, you have to just get on with it. But then I asked my consultant about it, and I said, look, I really just don't want to have to deal with this all day and all night and not sleep for the next 10 weeks. I want to try and feel a little bit good before my baby comes along. And he said, oh, absolutely, try this. And he prescribed me Losec, or L-O-S-E-C. And I cannot believe the difference it has made in just 2 days. So again, another problem, but there is other options and solutions.
Absolutely. And actually, that's just another thing to say with the hyperemesis. Some women, because they're vomiting so much, or because they're getting so much nausea, they can get a lot of heartburn as well. And Losec is completely safe and is another one to try. And so at any stage in your pregnancy, if you're really suffering from heartburn, and again, this is kind of, I think sometimes you think, oh, heartburn, no big deal. Heartburn can be absolutely horrible. And again, there's a safe solution for it. So don't suffer alone and ask for help, especially when the help is there.
I was so surprised to be told, you know, like, oh, here, just try this. Because I don't know, I feel like you always, with your GP or something, you feel like you need to really make a case for it. And I'm going in and be like, no, you have to really dramatize it. But just like, no, do you know what? It's hard enough. Here's something that might help. Give it a go. It's safe. And the most important thing is that it's safe.
Yes. Exactly. And I have found that just some pharmacists are a little reluctant to give it. So your doctor can give you a prescription and you know, even write a little note that you know they're an obstetrician and they're very happy for you to take it and it is safe. And if you do see any reluctance, that doesn't mean it's not safe. I think it just means some people are super cautious with pregnancy, but it is absolutely safe.
Okay, perfect. So courses and classes to make expectant parents feel a bit more empowered. Is there an ideal stage of pregnancy when you want to start doing classes or that kind of thing? I remember I signed up for it was just like a 2-hour thing, and it was about when baby comes, like how to bathe baby, how the position they have to sleep in, whatever. And to be honest, it was almost too early that it went in one ear and out the other. And now I feel like I can't even remember. Are you better off waiting until closer to the time for those things?
I suppose there's different sorts, I suppose, sort of antenatal classes. So if you can get one where they're almost time, you know, broken up by time, then that's great. And some classes can kind of talk you through all of this. And then when you're coming into the third trimester, you can go to those ones that tell you about labor and delivery and then afterwards bathing baby. So you can kind of do them in an order that is where you are at in your pregnancy, then that's probably the best way to do it.
Okay. So maybe get some of the information in second trimester about, you know, when the baby comes, and then towards, like, so for me now, I'm going to start a hypnobirthing course because I do notice myself starting to feel a little bit, I've been really calm mostly about the labor thing, but now that it's getting closer, I'm like, okay, I just want to make sure that like I'm looking after myself. Like you say, you know, my mental health, my well-being is just as important as the baby's. So for me, that is something that I feel makes more sense now that I'm actually feeling a little bit of anticipation than I would have in the second trimester.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's the best way to do it.
Okay. And then whatever hospital that you are signed up with, they all provide antenatal classes. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. And I suppose it's changed a little bit in the COVID era. Instead of attending a lot of these classes in person, they're online, and that's different. But the hospitals, I think, have responded really well to the pandemic, and they're now offering them online. So it is just different, but they're still available.
And when in the pregnancy should you start thinking about your wishes around giving birth, whether it's a home birth or a hospital? Now, for me, I don't have a birth plan, because in conversations with different women who were scanning me on my consultant, I just said, I actually don't know. And I don't know, maybe it's a bit more of a trend to come in these days with, you know, your 10 page birth plan. I said, I just want to, whatever is going to be safe and healthy, and, you know, nature is going to take over. That was just for me. I was like, I don't really have any specific ideas in my head of what I want to happen. I just want to be safe. So I'm hoping just to go into hospital and hand over the trust and the care to the professionals. But if someone is thinking about, you know, well, this is really what I want, like when would you start? Is that something you think about early on?
Any stage. So if some women feel really strongly about things, that might be in the first trimester. And for some women, they mightn't have really thought about that, because they're just getting accustomed to being pregnant, and it might be something you actually think of in the second or third trimester. I don't think there is a definite time you need to think about it. I think you can do what's right for you. I suppose if you're thinking about a home birth, it might be a good idea to think about that a little bit earlier, because I know for the HSE, there's kind of certain women who are not suitable for a home birth. So that might be something to find upsetting to find out quite late. So I would kind of have an idea if you want to have a home birth versus a hospital birth, to consider that a little bit earlier on in the pregnancy. Okay. Other than that, I think there's no time that you have to think about it. And again, as well, like what you said, if you have no preferences, that's absolutely fine too.
So I don't have to go in with the plan. I can just say, look, I'm just going to follow your advice because you know better than I do.
You can just say, I would just like me and my baby to be safe. Please mind us. And that's more than...
Yeah, and something I have already made clear for me personally is I'm like, I am all on board for the pain relief. And my doctor just said, just make sure when you come in, and like, again, this will be, you have its own episode, but just to really vocalize that you do want those things and not to be shy about saying what you want. And nothing will happen without your you being aware or your approval when push comes to shove, literally. Something I did want to ask you before we wrap up, C-sections in Ireland, is it possible to elect one now, or is it always a case of it being, it has to be done because of something like a breech position or an emergency section?
So it is possible, but what you might find is that that there's a lot of conversation around it. So I suppose if a woman, say it's her first time and baby is head down and she would like a cesarean section, there'd be a lot of conversation around that. So what we would try and explore is why specifically she'd like a cesarean section. Is it that she's afraid of labour, and is there anything we can do to address that? So there'd be a lot of conversation around that, and I suppose there would also be a lot of conversation around the risks associated with a cesarean section, because it's important to remember cesarean section is major abdominal surgery, so it is a big thing to undertake. But yes, if that is something you want, you're fully within your right to request it and to go ahead with it, but to just know there would be a lot of conversation around it.
And I know you are a big exercise fan. I have been enviously watching your stories of going for runs because my pelvic girdle pain has been so bad. I have been told, you know, even anything more than like a 10-minute walk is going to exacerbate it. So I have really missed exercising. But for people who aren't suffering with that to that extent, exercise is totally doable throughout pregnancy as long as you're feeling well. And is it right in saying that as long as it's something that you were doing before and you're not introducing an entirely new regime?
Yeah, exactly. So they're kind of the two things you want to tick. One is that you feel well enough to do it, and two is that it's what your body's used to. So, you know, if you don't run when you get pregnant, you know, you probably shouldn't be doing a 10K plan then.
Yeah.
But if you were an avid runner, absolutely work away as long as you feel well enough to keep doing it. If you were doing weights before you were pregnant, absolutely keep doing it. And there just might be some modifications. So a good idea in pregnancy is to continue as you were, plus or minus hold back a bit if you don't feel up to it. And then for women who maybe didn't exercise and are just conscious that they'd like to get some movement in pregnancy, walks are perfect. They're a great way to get, you know, kind of some light exercise in. You get outside into the sun. So I think I always recommend walking to women when they're not sure and don't want to take on anything too strenuous. Walks are a brilliant idea.
That's really reassuring, because I think, you know, a lot of women feel maybe even from a weight gain perspective, I think they need to be doing everything to like limit that for and recovery after birth and stuff. But it's been hard for me as someone who had really started to exercise, had become a real normal part of my life, like, you know, in the gym 3 times a week. And now I have to kind of accept that as much as I'd love to be doing that, I'm dealing with something bigger here, and I haven't been able to exercise as much as I'd like to, or really at all, apart from doing, I've done some very gentle pregnancy yoga and very gentle walks and that kind of thing. But it's if you're advised to do more resting because of what you're dealing with, that's okay as well.
Absolutely. And I think you just really need to listen to your body. Your body will tell you what you're able for and what you're not. And it's a really good time to be mindful of that.
Okay. And I suppose before we wrap up, just your general advice for women who are feeling a little bit overwhelmed at the beginning of what can feel like a very long journey with, you know, an awful lot of unknowns. Are we best to just take each week as it comes? Are we, you know, we're obviously built for this. I myself have adopted the approach of a need to know basis. Like I haven't actually found that researching and knowing everything that could go wrong, that to me makes me anticipate things going wrong. So I have found that I'd rather just confront every day and what it brings as it comes to me, and only really make myself aware of that which I really need to be aware of. But what would your advice be for reassurance?
Yeah, so I've kind of had a few different things. So I suppose while pregnancy is natural and you are built for this and you can do this, it can be hard, and you need to be kind to yourself. You need to not compare your body to others. And pregnancy really highlights that. Everybody's body is different and it reacts differently. So your friend might have sailed through it and you might be having a tough time, and that's not something to beat yourself up about, and you need to be kind to yourself. You should ask for support wherever you need it, and whether that be mental or physical support, reach out. Do not suffer in pregnancy alone. And then just to trust your body. While it is brand new and it is hard, our bodies have been doing this for years and they are able for this, and your body is going to do it. So kind of just to trust that you can do it.
Amazing. Dr. Sarah Murphy, thank you so much. You have answered every single question so beautifully, and I feel like there's so much in this that would really help women feel like, okay, this is the one episode I can go back to if I'm unsure, and to give people an idea of pregnancy at a glance. So I can't thank you enough for your time and your expertise, when I know you're so busy and you're, you know, on the front line, you know, essential worker at the moment, making such a difference to so many people's lives. So thank you so much.
Well, my absolute pleasure. It's kind of one of my favorite things to talk about. So
And that really comes across as well. So thank you.
No, I'm very happy to talk about it. It was a pleasure to be on your podcast.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.